Paul Steinhauser reports nationally on the president's trips for Fox and for us. Good morning, New Hampshire, the pulse of an H. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Jack. You're right. Last time the president was in New Hampshire was April of 2022, so almost 2 years ago, when he was in Portsmouth to tout the infrastructure law. He's coming back, as you mentioned, today. Goffstown is the first stop. That's where that's the official event, and then he'll have a campaign event a little later in the day in Manchester. You know, it's part of him going to all these battleground states. He did the State of the Union address on Thursday night. Friday, he was in Pennsylvania. Saturday, he was in Georgia. He's going to be hitting more of these battleground states this week. Michigan, Wisconsin, for sure, coming up in the next few days. So it's partly that. But also, remember, you know, the president had to steer clear of New Hampshire because of the whole primary kerfuffle on the Democratic side. He wasn't on the ballot. He did end up winning it, though, with that write-in effort. But he kept his distance from New Hampshire for almost 2 years because of all that. Coming back, we matter. We're a key general election state. So he is coming back and showing his face.
Yeah, you know, I heard one of our local Mike Pomp in our news this morning saying some analyst, and we'll hear from Neil Levesque at St. Anselm College and Senator Susie in a moment, say that, you know, maybe it's an overture, an olive branch to Democrats here for, you know, trying to snatch the primary here and not being here. I think it's more a sign that New Hampshire might matter next November, even with a slim number of electoral college votes. And I imagine the Trump camp feels the same way. New Hampshire could matter in this thing if it's a close one, Paul.
Exactly. You know, New Hampshire traditionally has been a battleground state. Biden did win it by 8 points over Trump 4 years ago. But normally this is a very close state. Remember 2016?
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton won the state by what, like 1,000 or 2,000 votes. So you know it. We're going to see plenty of Joe Biden. We're going to see plenty of Donald Trump in this state between now and November.
All right. Thank you, Paul. New Hampshire State Senator, one of the leaders in the state Senate, former Senate president, actually, I believe, up 2018 to 2020. Manchester, I think it's District 18, one of the Democrat leaders in the state Senate. Donna Susie previewing. They're talking about President Biden's trip to the Granite State. I believe there's an event in Goffstown YMCA and then Manchester. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Jack. Good to be with you.
Hope you've been well.
Very well, thanks.
It's interesting times. I mean, I guess both the president and Trump can wrap up their respective nominations technically tomorrow. So, you know, the general election, I think, kind of began last Thursday night at the State of the Union. But the president's coming here. What do you make of it? What do you expect? And good to have him back, even with the flap over the primary?
Oh, we're thrilled that he's back. You know, he's had quite the week, as you said, from the State of the Union to starting a tour, talking about all of the great achievements that the president has had during his administration, the creation of jobs, lowering prescription drug costs, as you said, you know, the Affordable Care Act, making it permanent, that so many people here in New Hampshire depend on. There's just so much excitement for the president, and we're thrilled that he's coming.
Well, you're out there. You're at the State House. You serve out of the state's largest city. You have your hand on the pulse. And I guess the question I'm looking at between now and November, what do you think, Senator Susie, when New Hampshire, and I'm asking more, I guess the biggest block might be independent voters. If you had to list the two top issues that they are looking at, the two top issues, what are they?
Well, I think independent voters are looking at a whole host of issues. I think most importantly, they're looking at economic issues, the kitchen table issues that matter most. They're also looking at freedom, and particularly women's reproductive freedom. And on both those accounts, the contrast could not be more clear. Joe Biden creating jobs, as I said, lowering prescription drug costs, dealing with the issue of affordability, and more importantly, you know, making sure that women have the right to make their own decisions. Donald Trump, in very sharp contrast, we know what the economy was like when he was president, and he's talked about things like, you know, making modifications to Social Security and Medicare, and most importantly, he credits himself with the elimination of Roe versus Wade. So I think it's going to be, you know, independent voters are going to be looking at ideas, new ideas and how we move forward versus Trump's old ideas and, you know, his grudges from the last campaign.
Senator Susie, I noticed you didn't say the border or immigration, and that seems to be a very high hot-button issue. Certainly the president touched upon it and has talked since the State of the Union about the border bill that stalled in Congress. Do you think I'm only asking this not to kind of debate a point. Do you think Republicans are making immigration in the southern border more of an issue than it is? Or do you think it is going to be a very big issue among, and a lot of Democrats aren't too happy about what's going on at the border as well. So do you think it's a bigger issue, or do you think it's being made a bigger issue by Republicans?
I think it's being made a bigger issue by Republicans, but I do think it's important and something people consider. And that's why the president worked with both Democrats and Republicans to come up with a bipartisan solution. Unfortunately, once again, we have that contrast where Donald Trump said, no, he'll look good for passing a bill. Don't let it happen. I mean, there was a real solution, a solution that both Democrats and Republicans embraced. And unfortunately, it hasn't made it to the floor. And I think the president is going to continue to talk about that solution and make sure that the American people know that he's there for them and working on that issue.
I noticed, Senator, that some of these national issues, by the way, Senator Donna Susie, Manchester, previewing the president's trip, Joe Biden coming to New Hampshire, first time in a few years, I get, you know, let the general election begin, I guess. You know, some of these national issues are coming into our stage. Thursday, there was the vote in the Senate. Senator Bradley had been on with a sponsor before talking about this to ban sanctuary city policies in the Granite State. I believe you voted against that. What are your thoughts on that particular bill? And is that an issue? Is that an example of some of this national stuff spilling over here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the language of the bill was clearly from a national organization. You know, the fact of the matter is I listened to my constituents. You know, one of the people who was opposed to the legislation was our very own chief of police, as was the chief in Nashua, Merrimack, Hudson. The chiefs of police know what they're doing here in the state of New Hampshire, and I trust their judgment. And they said this legislation wasn't needed, and they opposed it because, if anything, they felt it was going to create more of a problem. I think there's been a national effort to try to marginalize and demonize people of color and people that are, you know, trying to live the American dream. I mean, we have laws in place and we're enforcing laws in place for people that cross the border without, you know, any documentation. And we deal with that. But the fact of the matter is that this is much broader, and it seems to be a systemic effort to demonize people.
One of the moments before I let you go, Senator, and appreciate you being on, Senator Donna Susie, the president. By the way, what do you know roughly? Is it midday, afternoon, what time these events are in Goffstown and Manchester?
I believe midday. You know, as most visits are, the time is a bit fluid, but, mm-hmm. you know, people are going to be standing in line waiting to see the president, as you know, in the primary. I mean, the president's name wasn't on the ballot, and yet he got an overwhelming number of votes. There's a great deal of enthusiasm for him, and I think people will be excited to see him.
I want to just ask you one last thing. One of the moments in the State of the Union when the president came in and was greeting and talking, as all presidents do in that moment, you know, kind of soak up the sun, if you will, before going to deliver the State of the Union, a lot of eyes were on it. And, you know, the representative was a Green wearing the MAGA hat and handing something, you know, about the reference of Lake and Riley's murder in Georgia. The president actually went out of his way, kind of one of the spontaneous moments, and referenced that in the middle of his speech or somewhere in there. And I was watching, and he referred to her alleged murder as an illegal several times. And I saw subsequently over the weekend, he said, I'm paraphrasing, kind of sorry, I should have used the word undocumented. Do you think there was anything wrong with calling, because this one murder case has become so visible, maybe as an example of some of the ancillary effects of so many folks here, some, not all, some with criminal intent. Do you think that was a mistake or not to use the term illegal?
Look, I know it's been difficult to hear, probably difficult to hear over the incessant heckling of Marjorie Taylor Greene. Mm-hmm. But I think it's clear that what the president is saying is that when it comes to fixing immigration and rejecting cruel and hateful extremism of Donald Trump and Marjorie Taylor Greene, that the president is just fighting for a more fair immigration system that treats everybody with dignity and respect. I mean, you know, as I said, he worked in good faith on this bipartisan immigration deal, a deal that would have improved immigration, and yet, you know, it didn't make it across the threshold yet to his desk. And I'm hoping that they continue to revisit that particular piece of legislation. But, you know, I think what people see through with the Marjorie Taylor Greens and Donald Trumps is what I said, that demonizing and that hatefulness. And that's certainly not what President Biden is all about. President Biden is about fairness and dignity and upholding the laws of the land. So,
appreciate the time, Senator Donna Soucy out of Manchester. Appreciate to get you back again soon. Good morning, New Hampshire, the Pulse of an Age. Make it a great Monday.
Thanks, Jack. Have a great day.
Doug Tengden, worldmarketadvisors.com, worldmarketadvisors.com. Taking a look at the budget, the pocketbook issues. Interesting, I just asked one of the leading state Democrats in the state on the president's trip here, what are the two top issues, do you think? And one of the things she said was the economy, you know, kitchen table, household budget items. I would agree with that. But take it away, Doug. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jack. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Up here, we had about 6 inches of snow, followed by rain, followed by snow, now followed by freeze. So it's been a little bit different up here. More like March than down there.
Did you get all snow the other night, which is great for your skiing?
We did get snow. It turned into a little bit of rain, and then it turned back into snow. We lost power for an hour or couple hours in middle of the day. All the Upper Valley did. I'm not quite sure what it was.
Well, I think it was wind and combination. It was pretty gusty. Interesting weather. What do you have in the economy? Windy, gusty. What's going on?
Well, we're going to get CPI, the Consumer Price Index, this week, and that's going to give the Fed a little more data to work with. They want to see inflation closer, you know, headed towards 2%. I mean, we've had inflation at 2%, but we had a couple of prints at the beginning of the year, I think related to technical factors having to do with the way they measure it. But I think inflation is pretty much running there. The issue people have is that inflation was running at 8% for a while, and their wages didn't keep up. And now wages have moved back up to more like 4%, and inflation is more running at 2%. But they still feel, you know, it still costs, more than they would like at the grocery store. You still have price of apples, price of eggs, price of fresh produce is affecting people's pocketbooks. And I think you're right about the election being about pocketbook issues. I think, you know, people will say, gee, it's not so good right now.
You know, Doug, we have Aaron Rial. No, we have Rory O'Neill on today, NBC News, looking at a new study that says so many more people are using credit cards for the wrong reason, basically to keep the household budgets going.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's good. You know, they kind of got in a habit of doing that, you know, 10 years ago when interest rates were zero and credit cards were charging, you know, 6 or 7%. Now credit cards are charging 22%. And it's a lot more expensive. That's going to get them upside down pretty quickly. That's where doing some financial planning, a little budget planning, manage your cash flow, far more effective. And if people do need to borrow money, even their houses cost a lot more now. I mean, obviously mortgage rates aren't at 8% anymore, but they're not at 6.5% either. I do think that's where we head. I think after the Fed lowers rates, which they should do already, but they're not doing it yet because they're just scared. We do end up at a 6.5% mortgage, but we're not there yet.
Yeah. All right, Doug. CPI. Do you have any prediction here, or what do you think?
I don't know what the CPI is going to come out. I think the street is expecting 0.2 or 0.3 month over month. I think year over year, the core continues to head downward, down in the 3 and change, and we probably hit to the low 3 and change and headed towards 2 and change. The Fed's not going to move until June at the earliest.
Yeah.
You used to say they wouldn't go during election, but now they've backed themselves, so they have to move then. But, you know, the worry I have, Jack, is that the economy looks good. We look like we're creating a lot of jobs, but it feels like it could be fragile.
Yeah, it does feel like fragile.
It could break easily.
Speaking of the season, watch out for the fragile ice. Doug Tengden, World Market Advisors. Thank you, Doug. WorldMarketAdvisors.com. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. You have a great week.
Neil Levesque, Executive Director, St. Anselm College Institute of Politics. Neil, I'm sorry, it's just me. I got some sleep last night. I didn't really watch much of the Academy Awards, but my point is, got some sleep, and I did have to chuckle on the news spin this morning on the president's trip, trying to kind of send an olive branch, the DNC and the Biden White House, to New Hampshire Democrat leaders for snubbing us and stealing our, you know, trying to, you know, not trying, basically quashing, ignoring, and saying we're not a very good representative state, not coming here, not being on our primary, not being on the ballot, even though Biden, the incumbent, amazingly beat Dean Phillips and Marianne Williamson, coming here today to kind of, you know, make amends. I had to chuckle. He's here today for one reason. Politics, general election has begun, kind of began last Thursday night, State of the Union. And the state and this election between Biden and Trump, they could wrap up their presumptive nominees as early as tomorrow. It might be that close where our, what, four electoral college votes may matter. But, Neil, good morning. The president, first trip here in 2 years, so big deal?
I think it's a big deal and certainly welcome that he's coming here. He's coming to Goffstown, where I'm actually located as we speak. He's going to be going to the YMCA. It is a very awkward situation because they wanted to basically have the party bosses take over the primary system so that the president couldn't at all be challenged. He didn't appear here on the ballot. They did have a write-in campaign, and Democrats in New Hampshire overwhelmingly said, we like Joe Biden or we want him to be the nominee, and they wrote him in. So now he's got to come back. It is a very awkward situation. There's no doubt about it. But I think he sort of comes here today and potentially puts that in the rearview mirror as we move towards November. So it's a strange thing. I think it's tough, too, for our congressional delegation, which obviously they support the New Hampshire presidential primary, but they're in a kind of a tough spot, too, because they support the president. So I think today's visit will sort of – those questions will sort of get answered, and they can move on to the issues that they want to talk about as they go towards November.
But clearly – New Hampshire might matter, you know, slim electoral college. But that's what I'm hearing from the Trump folks. And because you're going to see more Trump and the Biden folks. I think that's why he's here. I may be wrong.
Well, the four electoral votes, they have been very meaningful in the past. If Al Gore had won them, he would have become president of the United States. And what we've seen here with our own St. Anselm polling is that Trump has been down anywhere between 10 and 12 points to Biden in New Hampshire. So Biden, this is a state that he definitely could win. It looks that way as far as polling goes. It has been a toss-up state in the past, but it may not be so much this time. But, you know, when you're going around, you're trying to get the math. We don't have the amount of electoral votes a state like California does, but if you're trying to pick off some of these states that have been, you know, what we call purple states or sort of down the middle states, New Hampshire is one of them, and he's got to hit these. So it's timed after the State of the Union. He'll carry on that same message that he had last week with the State of the Union, and he'll have the delegation there with him.
Well, we haven't really caught you since Thursday night's State of the Union. You know, it's interesting. You know, I had Donna Susie, state senator out of Manchester, one of the leading Democrats, former state senate president, speaking on behalf of the Biden-Harris team this morning to kick off my show previewing the trip. But one of the questions I asked her was, independent voters in November here are going to decide this thing and the state races. What are the two? Tell me, Senator, the two top issues. And she mentioned economy, sort of kitchen table, household budget, and, you know, an answer, which I think is correct. And then she mentioned, you know, abortion rights. And I'm surprised she didn't mention the border at all, or immigration. And I asked her, are Republicans trying to make this a bigger issue than it is, or do you think voters out there really are locking in? And I brought up the sanctuary city bill in the state Senate Thursday that she voted against. Senate President Bradley, it passed. Republicans, total split down party lines. But I asked her, didn't mention immigration and the border. What do you think is an issue as we look into the presidential election this fall?
Well, Biden's worst numbers, if you look at the polling, are with what we call immigration, the immigration issue. But the immigration issue is really a issue of the rule of law and crime. And he does very poorly on that. That rates only a close second to the economy in our polling here in New Hampshire. So even though we're a state that, you know, we're not along the southern border, New Hampshire is a top, or immigration is a top issue in New Hampshire. And as a result, if the president is losing on that issue, they want to talk about the economy, or they want to talk about Roe versus Wade, and that's smart for them. He does, and in the past, say, 2 or 3 weeks, the president has been trying to sort of take some ground away from the Republicans on this issue. I don't know if it's been very successful, but he's definitely switched gears on it. But it is an albatross, really, for him, and a big anchor, because it is an issue that people are talking about all over the state and all over the country, and he's got to win that issue, really, if he wants to get any of those voters.
What do you make of the, in the president's State of the Union, after Representative Green kind of stopped the president on the Lake and Riley murder in Georgia, and the president spontaneously, and I think to his credit, pivoted when he's talking about this border bill, brought up her murder, even if he mentioned, you know, I give him a buy on this one, Lincoln versus Lakin, but it was spontaneous, and he referred to her alleged murderer as an illegal, and he said it a few times. I think the president was correct, but he did this interview the other day after the State of the Union saying, you know, I'm sorry, I probably should have used the term undocumented. And I asked Senator Susie about the same subject. What do you make of him doing that pivot? Is it just to placate the so-called progressive squad of the far left of the base? Because I think the president was natural and correct in referring to this guy who broke into the country through El Paso, Texas last year from Venezuela. Criminal record, criminal background, terrible, you know, rape, beating, murder of this nursing student in Georgia, an illegal. It's just funny how some people have reticence to refer to him as that.
That's like being on a tightrope with your two pinky toes sitting there holding your whole body on the rope. I mean, he has to walk this tightrope, and a lot of this is about identity politics and what you refer to somebody. But I think that a lot of Americans who are frustrated, again, by the, quote, immigration issue, which is the rule of law and crime, believe that people here who are here who shouldn't be are here illegally. And this is an issue, I think, that is what it does is it says to all these folks, he doesn't necessarily get it. He's not concerned with the same things we are because he's kind of placate to the left with this verbiage. The point is people are upset because a lot of people coming here who are not going through the process. And to some degree, some of those folks are committing crime, some, and people are seeing it on the news and they're frustrated by it. And when the president backtracks like that, I think that it kind of shows where he is on this issue, and it's not where a lot of Americans are.
Interesting. All right, Neil, I'm going to let you go. We'll see where it goes. Neil Beck, Institute of Politics, St. Anselm College. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
All right, welcome back. You know, we sprung ahead over the weekend clockwise. It has nothing to do with a ban on TikTok nationally. Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent, joining us. Good morning, Aaron. And it looks like this might have some political momentum behind it.
Yeah, this one, for all the bipartisan, this one is unanimous. They want it. And President Biden said he'll sign it. So essentially, he said Friday that he would sign into law a bill that would effectively ban TikTok by forcing it to sell its parent company, ByteDance, to a American-based company that would be approved by lawmakers. They have said they are not doing this. It would take it away from its Chinese owners. And U.S. lawmakers are attempting to really, really address national security risks by advancing this bill. Honestly, Jack, I wouldn't be surprised if by Friday we're talking about how TikTok's gone dark, given how quickly this went.
Does a derivative form, in other words, if it does a, you know, some parts of TikTok, does some consortium form where it, you know, supposedly has more American investment or ownership and less Chinese control, or do you think that's what goes, it goes? Because it is, the reason why I say that, it is kind of the dominant place for a short video social media news ahead of all the other ones probably combined.
It is, and especially with young people. That's where it's wildly popular. But the fact of the matter is, let's give the example of what happened last Thursday when this was moving from the House Energy and Commerce Committee to a vote, which was unanimous, by the way, 50-0. But TikTok at that point on Thursday sent out a notification to all 170 million American users urging them to complain to their House representatives about the bill. The app let them call their representatives with just a couple presses of a button. basically lawmakers have said that they were just inundated with calls, an incredible amount. And really what this did was illustrate to any sort of lawmaker that might have been on the fence about, you know, free speech or small businesses, it basically showed that TikTok can mobilize an army of people, they can gather data, and then they can push user behavior, which is exactly the reason why lawmakers don't want the company to have ties to China.
All right, Aaron Riel, thank you very much. The clock is ticking. I'm sorry. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent, on this Monday morning. Rory, I hope you had a good weekend.
It was an hour too short, I can tell you that.
Well, I went to bed early, so it didn't matter. I got plenty. Credit cards are floating a lot of American households with higher rates, if you will, to pay as that debt grows.
Well, right. And one thing this new bank rate survey finds is that people, even people with credit card debt that they carry from month to month, they still keep using their cards in order to try to get points or miles, thinking that that $150 hotel room is worth carrying all this extra debt. And when you run the numbers, it's pretty clear it's a bad program for any consumer that carries the debt from month to month. Look, Bankrate promotes and advertises a lot of these points cards, but only saying you've got to pay them off every single month. If you carry a balance with the average rate now about 22.75%, these points and perks are losing deals.
Well, I think, and I understand that completely, because you get all these loyalty cards, some airlines and everything else, Rory, but I think the fact is a lot of people need the cards to pay the bills.
Well, right, and that's another sad factor.
I mean, they don't have the choice. I mean, if you're short $2,000 or $3,000 and you get a unexpected, the refrigerator goes, something happens, the kid gets health care bill. Whoop! Whip out the credit card. We don't have it in the checking account.
Right, but if you think that you say, well, hey, look, I know we went out to dinner tonight, and I know I've got $6,500 on the credit card, which is the average. You know, let's use this card because it'll get me closer to a free hotel room. That's a bad, bad financial plan. 2 in 3 Americans with credit card debt are still out there trying to maximize reward points. And the survey says that's just not a good way to go. The points aren't worth the interest.
No, you can't argue with that. Thank you, Rory. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg.
Tom Raffio, host of the Northeast Delta Dental Show on the weekends, president and CEO of that great entity. And, of course, stories from the starting line. We always out there and about. You're not sitting around on the sofa. You're moving every minute. What's going on, Tom?
Moving and grooving. Thank you, Jack, and happy birthday, Jay. Moving and grooving. So we had a great weekend. Saturday we had a trail race in Franklin, which raised money for the 4-H Club, and it was originally going to be a snowshoe race, but obviously we transitioned to trail shoes or sneakers. We call the race Snow or No We Go. So we always have the race, and if there's not enough snow, then we migrate to sneakers. But again, like most things that Delta Dental does, it's a combination of, you know, population health, camaraderie, but then raising funds in this case for 4-H. And then Sunday there was a race in your old neck of the woods in Portsmouth, St. Paddy's Day race near the schools down there near Pease, and the charity of choice was Special Olympics, and it's been great to Delta Dental has a tent, and we always have it near Special Olympics, so it's been great to see the folks from Special Olympics. And then on the work front, and this is really great news, and this is not Delta Dental promoting itself, but on Thursday night we hosted a dinner called Carried Away, and it's really a program where dentists and hygienists are going to local schools for kids' oral health. And Delta Dental made a $1 million gift to this organization. Well, and here's why. Because we discovered that because of COVID and other reasons, a lot of these school-based programs have dissipated over the past few years. So we're filling the void, because you really do need to start, you know, good oral health habits early. And on the other end, of course, you know, we have the veterans program and we have the Medicaid program, but our thought was starting it early with a school-based program. So once I learned that these school-based programs had started to wane, we jumped in. And then the last thing that will be officially announced in 2 weeks, but there's a shortage of hygienists in the state, and what we're going to do is gift NHGI Dental School, Dental Hygiene School, $500,000 to enrich their hygiene program, so we'll get more hygienists and assistants graduating. So while I'm very sports oriented and have a lot of fun in my life, I still pay attention to my real job, Jack. So,
well, I know you do. Can I just touch upon the investment you made on getting sort of the professionals into the oral health profession for tomorrow? What do we do here at home, Tom, in a positive way? Because I talk with folks in public safety, state police, the openings. We have the head of the firefighters on tomorrow. I've heard from firefighters, EMTs, nursing, healthcare, especially nursing. You mentioned hygienist. And how do we kind of, what can we do that we're not doing to, well, you're doing it because you're making action out there, like what you just talked about. We need to do more of this, though, to let younger people know about these wonderful, noble professions where you help people. They can be career-oriented, because I just think that, I don't know why more younger people aren't looking at these frontline public safety, fabric of society positions. Is it because they feel they don't pay enough? Well, I mean, I'm just curious.
Well, one of the things we discovered is we go to school fairs, and you've got to get down to literally like the eighth grade level, eighth, ninth, tenth grade, and show, we have these wonderful, easy-to-read flyers showing that the dental profession is a great profession, whether you're an assistant hygienist or a dentist. I think you've got to start it early. And the other macro thing that the healthcare workers and the other frontline folks that you reference are dealing with is, in this day and age where in a lot of corporations you're allowed to work virtually or at least in a hybrid environment, you're now competing with jobs where you can work from home. Obviously, if you're a hygienist or a nurse in general, you're not working from home. So I think as we reconnect as a human society, I think people do want to help other people, and that's what I appeal to. And number two, it is a good salary to be a hygienist and a nurse, and of course as well as a dentist. So we are trying to attract at the younger age, and that seems to have helped out a little bit.
Yeah, because I know we just had J-Doggy to help me out. Was it Beth Vachon with Lakes Region Mental Health?
Yes.
Healthcare, mental health services, younger people to go into the behavioral medicine side of things. Again, shortages of getting young people into these trades, and that's really affecting more families than anything else on the behavioral health side.
You got it. We just addressed that last week. We had a nighttime meeting of very many mental health professionals, including Justice Broderick as well, and we were addressing, you know, that shortage. So I think we'll get at it. I mean, the invisible hand eventually corrects everything, but I think we have to, you know, stay the course, and every one of us need to do our part. So in our case, you know, we're trying to help out with NHGI, and I'm sure there are a lot of other companies, you know, that are trying similar things. So,
yeah.
So thanks for getting the word out there, and I'm looking forward
to
talking to you, Fred.
Thanks for the leadership.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
All right,
Take
Tom.
Care.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.